What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast AET Direct with Josie Harding. Josie is joining us from her car, dedicated to the profession, growing, busy, always on the move. And I've also got Adam Halpern. He's joining us. He is the owner, founder, creator of Innovate AET. And so that's a really cool deal here we're going to be talking about as we look at different ways to do athletic training. So Josie's doing something different with athletic training, and Adam is helping us innovate and change and grow to a business model with Innovate AT. So if you want to join this conversation, it's sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/AT Direct. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/AT Direct. So without much further ado, Josie, welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Adam, welcome.
Yeah, same thing. Appreciate the invite.
All right, and of course, I am your host, Jeremy Jackson, and we're going to get right to Josie. Why don't you start us off with your story? Tell us kind of how you got into athletic training, where you are now, and how you kind of the gap between the two.
Yeah, so when I actually started college, I didn't even know this profession existed. I was a college athlete, was injured, and realized that at a small university, really not going anywhere with softball, I decided to switch over professions. I was going into nursing and athletic training. And then from there, my love for athletic training just grew. I decided that I wanted to continue my education. So left the great state of North Dakota and came down to the sunny state of Arizona and got my master's and finished up my master's in 2015. During that time, I actually worked as a graduate assistant and through Fountain Hills High School. I did my master's through AT Still University right down in Mesa. And then just volunteered my time a lot. A lot of my volunteer time consisted of really working out in the outdoor events, football events, and some lacrosse and wrestling events. After that, kind of had this niche for baseball and was interested in taking the study and research that I've done throughout graduate school and seeing what it would do in the setting. I did an internship with Oakland Athletics. Really, you know, it wasn't really my niche, so I got back out of it and worked at a clinic called Defense Movement in Scottsdale. During that time, I was an outreach program there and was placing athletic trainers out at the local events in the state of Arizona. And then from there, the clinic didn't really do what we wanted to, and then I decided that at the time, I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, so I went back into baseball. And then from baseball, I'm still there. I actually work full-time in baseball. And then 2 years ago, I decided to start my own company, realizing that there's a way and standard that how this profession should have outreach setting that I really had a passion for, but it wasn't really done here in the state of Arizona. So I started it 2 years ago, and now we are everywhere from local high schools. We work a lot in preparatory schools around here in the state of Arizona. And then we cover outreach events such as soccer, football, lacrosse, basketball. So that's where I'm at today.
All right. So you're working with lots of outreach events. You say you're working full-time baseball. Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about the capacity in which you're working with baseball.
So right now I'm a minor league athletic trainer and I work at the rookie level. So here in the state of Arizona, we have our rookie ball team here. So I help work with a lot of our international kids and I cover throughout the summer their games.
All right. So does that cause you to travel? Do you go with any of the teams or you just work at this site?
I just work at this site currently. So it's in Maryville in the state of Arizona.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So you got the idea 2 years ago to start an outreach company. That was probably some of your experience in volunteering and seeing that they didn't have that. But tell me a little bit more about why you decided to start that company.
So I had a passion for setting the standard in how the standard of care should be at these clubs in outreach setting, for example, for tournaments and, you know, adult leagues and these simple league games that were happening around. We didn't really have, when I went out there as an athletic trainer, I wasn't protected. I had no one there who protected me, who showed me the ways to make sure I had A, B, and C in place. And then also there was really no, like the clubs was almost forgotten. The high school's very traditional setting around here in athletic training in general. And there was just there was nothing really offered out there, like simple of documentation standards that are out there, what it means to have sideline care and what we could do on the sideline rather than referring a simple ankle sprain to the ER and saving money from the parents' pockets. So that passion and the change not only protect and show athletic trainers that you can be supported in this setting while you still make some side money, but that there's a change and there's an opportunity in club settings, especially the club world, that we could change the way that standard of care was given.
Adam, you feel free to jump in there any time. You got questions, comments, thoughts. All right. So Josie, working full-time with baseball and then you're also running AT Direct. So where do you see yourself in like 10 years? Are you going just AT Direct managing that? Or is that going to be something that you hopefully manages itself and you're still continuing to work baseball? What does that look like?
My goal actually is to, I would be honest with you, 6 months ago, I didn't know. I was still kind of on the fence of what exactly was my calling as an athletic trainer. I do believe that we each have a calling into a certain setting that you work. And so my goal is to actually be managing AT Direct full time and filter out of baseball. Baseball has been nothing but a great experience in networking that I wouldn't give up for the world. And the experience and the not only skill set, but the people and the individuals that I have met have gotten me where I'm at today. So, but yeah, my plan is to be full time into AT Direct, and hopefully that's in this next year.
Josie, that's awesome. It's great to hear, you know, athletic trainers around the country are stepping outside of their comfort zone, which is what we call that traditional model, and starting to, you know, break down barriers to be successful on their own accord. So if there's other athletic trainers that are listening to this podcast, interested, questioning, excited about the opportunity to start their own business, like give them a little bit of insight about the pros and the cons, the ups and the downs, about what you've learned in the last 2 years.
So the pros would be that you get to be creative. You get to find what works for you. I think a lot of the times, just as an individual, you're trying to figure out, you know, what is your niche? What is your passion? What is your drive? And you're trying to fit it to your career. I got to be really, really creative in the fact that helping youth has been a passion of mine since I was growing up. Like I would help my mom with the daycare, and being able to help that on the aspects of having passion in sports. So you get to be creative, very creative in how you brand yourself, and you get to brand yourself as your company, and your company gets to create its brand as you continue to grow it. The other thing is I have met some incredible people in these last 2 years, everything from networking. You know, I didn't even know yours existed, like the innovated athletic training, until I met Brandy. So being able to network with athletic, the entire nation in my profession is amazing to me. And the support that we have as athletic trainers, we're a very small niche community. And it's amazing when you get the right group to support you, what can happen, especially for us, like what can happen with your company. I'd say the negative is you have to be willing to put in the work. It is not easy. You know, I do work very, very long hours, not able to quite be away from that full-time position, my traditional full-time position. It can get to be really, really long days. Sometimes can be a little bit exhausting. You do have to give up things for the long term, but you always have to keep your sight on like what's the long-term goal and why you're doing this. And you have to, like, one of the biggest things, I didn't know much about business. So I had to, and, you know, ask the experts out there for help. And I don't know what I'm doing, so I need to ask for help. And that was something, I think, in athletic training, we're very prideful of what we do. And sometimes we are so bad at asking for help. And so that was one thing, like, once I got over that, I was able to kind of get rid of that. I can't do this. This is too much on my plate.
No, that's good. So to give some of those other athletic trainers guidance, where are you finding some of those outside resources, you know, experts in other industries to support you with your passion?
So I have actually gotten a business consult. So, you know, to be outside of the athletic training world, is that individual has come in and look at the processes, operations, logistics on how she has a business mindset. So she's come in from the outside and shown me what it's like to, you know, have a business mindset and what it means to run. So being able to step out and have her as a consult has taught me a lot more about the business world, because I, you know, I'm an expert in athletic training. That's my expertise. Other ways is in understand a small business lawyer. So I can be able to have contracts approved, anything from like legal questions, a simple legal question, being able to bring that person on my team, you know, networking with people within the marketing industry and understanding how social media works in this day and age and what it means to a company and how it can promote us as a company. So there's a lot of realms. It hasn't just been an athletic training, the networking. I've been really, really going outside my network and gaining insight from people who are in the business world, the marketing world, the legal world, and helping them grow my company.
No, very cool. There's the phenomenon of, you know, when you leave a job and you start a business, it's because you want to be a business owner, you want to be an entrepreneur. But then sometimes people get sucked into, they just created another job for themselves. How has that transition been from I'm delivering a service and services and building a team around that deployment of the service?
Like the experience with it, or?
Well, the experience and how you have found the qualified athletic trainers to maintain your high quality standards, to maintain your brand, everything that goes underneath that umbrella.
So being in the traditional setting, professional world, like I was strictly giving a service of sports medicine. I was only there to take care of the athlete and go home at night. Then transitioning over to this non-traditional setting and running a company, I had to take a different role. So I had to take the hat off of, I'm not just giving the care, I'm also delegating and mandating and making sure that people out there are giving the role or the care and the role that and standards that we would give. So it's been a learning experience, because I'm very young, as individuals would say in my profession, that it could be hard sometimes to, you know, you set the standard and you expect the standard to be given. And so individuals be like, well, you don't have this experience yet to do that. So I've had to, you know, get rid of those comments, take away from the hat, put on a different hat and be more of a leader. And so, you know, making sure that we have a process in place when it comes to, you know, we don't really, they're independent contractors. So when we do an onboard hiring process and making sure that they, you know, what's the standard of that and how they can get through it to make sure that our quality of care is what we want it to be. Making sure that our physicians that we work with are on board and they have a great connections with the group of athletic trainers that we work with. You know, we even set a standard of care with the customer and client that we work with. There's plenty of times that we've had to say no because they just want us there as, you know, coverage. That's it. They don't really see us as a partner, and we're more of a partnership where, you know, we're there to create this medical care, but we're also there to improve the quality of your event. So, you know, being able to have to step out and do that has been a different role than just providing care too.
Another question around what you just mentioned, when you're working with providers, you know, and the tagline or athletic training month, the slogan is ATs are healthcare. What is your revenue model? Like how is, and you don't have to be specific because, you know, it might be your, you know, your secret sauce, but are you guys focusing on an insurance reimbursement? Are people paying you out of registration fees? Is it someone just paying you straight cash? What is your revenue model for your business?
So we, depending on the event, we try to, like when it comes as they pay for the service, but that mm-hmm. service that they pay for, isn't only for the athletic trainer. It comes for all the other things that like what we provide for them too. So they either pay a flat rate or hourly rate is how the would work. So we would, and then what we do is we show, like you mentioned, insurance cut costs between some of the stuff that we do on field and some of our documentation that we do. We're able to come back to that client or organization and show them, you know, if we weren't here, what could insurance cost or out of the pocket of the parents? So we kind of market it towards like, what could we save the pocket, the money that comes from the parents' pockets if they were to not have an on-site medical. And then also what we're finding out too is when we provide these services, one of our marketing thing has been, is we're finding that that organization's liability insurance goes down to having us on site. So that's been something too, that's been an easy way of marketing and getting us out to them.
Nice. And then are you having follow-up care? Like if someone gets injured at your event, because you're local, are you able to continue the treatment after the fact?
Yes, we are actually very lucky to be able to continue that. So that's one thing that AT Direct takes a lot of pride in doing, is we actually follow up after events. So we do follow-up calls. And what we do is, you know, we ask the individual, we have the documentation, and depending on what the documentation said, if they needed a follow-up care, we're able to get them into the network of physicians that we work with here. And it's usually, you know, next day, same day appointments that we're able to get them to. And we are now currently moving forward to starting meeting with more urgent cares that are orthopedic based that we would be able to network with too.
Nice. Congrats. Thanks. And how many athletic trainers work as an independent contractor?
We have in AT Direct's pool, we have 91 contracted athletic trainers, but there's about a consistent of 25 that work weekly. Yeah. And then out of those 25, 6 of those are at local high schools.
Nice. As your contract, or that's their full-time job, and then they do events?
They are contracted. We're hopefully moving forward into that more of the HR stuff where we're able to make them more of an employee rather than a contractor. Right. So right now they're contractors, but as employees. And with those high schools, it's actually 1, 2, 3 of them have been brand new programs that we started through AT Direct.
Have you had any conversations with like Alicia Pennington? Because I know that she has something very similar going on in, I think, New Mexico, Arizona. I don't know. I know for sure in California, but I think she's also working in another state to where they're doing that same thing or something similar, that staffing, and they're placing them in high schools and trying to create full-time positions. And like you said, creating new positions. Have you had any conversations with her?
Lots, actually. Alicia Pennington has become a great resource and a great friend to talk to because she has been in where I was at. Her business is going on 7 years now, I believe, or they just had their 7th year anniversary. But yeah, I talked to Alicia Pennington a lot. There's actually another person too called Wyatt Blue. He has Game Day Athletics, and they're based primarily out of Colorado, and they do some Southern California. So I actually can network with both of those guys because our ultimate goal is to create this, you know, uniform standard of care. So we do want to start working together because I don't plan on going into California. We have enough events here in Arizona that we're able to cover that we want to try to keep it right now. We want to try to keep it in the state. So we're trying to create like simple things on, you know, when a soccer event happens, there's this called injury free, but Arizona Youth Soccer has complete access to it. So if there are California kids over here and we do a documentation, how can we make sure that we're completing the standard that they're looking for? So then when they go back over into California and Alicia's contractors or Wyatt's contractors have access to that documentation, that they're seeing the same thing that they would expect from us that we expect from them. So yeah, we communicate a lot together. A lot of individuals, I would say, ask why, like, you know, isn't that your competitor? Why would you continue to talk with them? Like, aren't you guys competing? And I personally think like us who have come into a model like this in the athletic training world, we need to start utilizing each other more, and we need to start helping each other create these business models and create this standard that can explode across the entire United States and help us create this uniform care that we're looking for.
I mean, if you talk about partnerships, because Go4Ellis is an NATA preferred provider, are you guys trying to start a conversation with them as well?
We have not, but that's a good insight.
Yeah. Do you have another question, Jeremy? Look like you were going to say something.
I was just going to comment again. Like it's the same thing like with the podcast. You know, Alicia has a podcast, and it would be, you know, oh, well, are you competing with her? Or like Todd Sable or Jeff Driven. So there's other athletic trainers that have it, but instead of saying, oh, I don't want you guys listening to that, like, hey, if she has Alicia has a different style, Todd has a different style, you know, if those fit you better, or in addition to what we're doing here on the Sports Medicine Broadcast, then please do. And while we're at NATA, Alicia is going to be hosting several of them. I just talked to Todd Zabel, and one of the questions I had kind of had for you, which I think Adam pretty much covered, it was like the third party billing. You know, how are you doing that? How are you billing? And Joe Green is going to be on during NATA, where Todd's going to interview him because Todd's looking to open his own clinic. So instead of saying, you know, I don't want you as part of this, I do want us all to grow, to learn. And one of the really cool things I heard you say was that you're creating a network. You're trying to grow, I guess, a grassroots movement across the country of youth and club sport care, and setting that standard of care rather than, well, here, this is how I do it, and they can do whatever they want over there. You're trying to take from what Alicia's doing and go with that, and then that's growing there in Colorado there as well. And so you're kind of growing that similarity, and hey, this is what we're doing across the country. So tell me just a little bit more about how some of the ways that you are doing that, or some of the things that you've really learned from working together.
One of the things that I realized is, you know, creating a standard operating procedure. So one of the biggest things that we're looking for is, you know, the customer client and the event and charging, and making sure, you know, one of the biggest thing athletic trainers do, and I still think they do to this day, and Adding probably say yes more than I can, is we undercut ourselves. We don't think we're worth what we really are. So one of the things that I've been learning and networking and talking with these other athletic trainers who have a business like this is, you know, the standard of what we're charging. Because that right there can be the hardest thing across, because they can come to me and I give them a set rate, and then this is what's involved. And then they can go to, you know, Alicia, and she gives them a set rate. But if they're completely different set rates, but we're offering the same service and we're trying to create this uniform standard, we're really not helping each other out. So I think one of the one things that we're trying to create is, you know, what, and it obviously depends per region that you're in the United States, because it's going to be different in some places. But like, we don't want to be charging differently and undercutting one another. We want to make sure that, you know, if we're going to set the standard, that we've got to be doing it together, and that we're setting it like this, because right there, if I'm charging $10 less than she's charging, but yet we offer the same product, it's just undergrading the value that both of us are trying to build. Areas that we are really working on is creating the standard of this pricing of what this product would look like across the entire United States or in the area that your business is represented. Another one is being able to network with and creating the standard of, like, how are we hiring on, you know, are we just saying, yep, this, we know this individual, he's going to work for us, or like, how are we making sure that quality of care and that athletic trainer is the quality that we want them to work at? So being able to create that standard, such as making sure we collect the proper licensure, that they're going through a background check, that we are having them go through, you know, something that we're working on here in ATR, just creating modules, hiring to listen to these modules. And then at the end of them, they, you know, it's still in the works, but at the end of them, they're able to take these small little quiz, and they're ready to go because they have the standard of what we're looking for in the care of them. So those are the couple of things that we're working on right now.
You bring up a good point. Oh, sorry. You bring up a good point about trying to set the standard of, you know, pricing and just how athletic trainers don't value themselves. What I've been kind of looking at lately is, like, what is the value of athletic training? And, like, the setting we're traditionally in, it, like, we don't charge for our services. We all know that, right? You get a flat rate. It's called a salary. You do as much as you can, you be as good as you are, and you make the same amount of money as someone that, you know, works less or isn't as good. So if we look at our real value, like, a lot of what we do is in that prevention space, right? We're preventing it from maybe happening again, maybe preventing it from happening altogether, preventing it from getting worse. And ultimately, everything we do, and you even mentioned it earlier, is we're preventing those high long-term medical expenses. So if we can keep someone out of the ER, like, we're saving someone a lot of money because they didn't need to go there. So when we look at, like, the definition of healthcare, like, healthcare is really like a government defined term that is centered around insurance, right? The general public, they look at, how do I take care of my health? And sometimes they'll go to yoga. Sometimes they'll get a personal trainer. But I think the athletic training profession as a whole really needs to start to question themselves. Like, are we really going down healthcare path and trying to be solely focused on third-party reimbursement? Or are we this little niche within the care of individuals that no one else addresses? Everyone else is wellness or everyone else is performance, but we're in this really, really, really strong prevention arm where we have accessibility to us. And then you mentioned it, you're able to get all these athletes into the next level provider as quickly as possible. So when I talk about ATs or healthcare, I'm actually questioning, I don't think we are healthcare. I think we are prevention care that people will pay out of pocket because the way healthcare is defined, it's solely insurance. So when we talk about third-party reimbursement, yes, if we're in a clinic, that's only going to enhance our professional, you know, support and growth. But ultimately, if we're able to have the end user pay us directly and we're eliminating a third party from dictating what we should get paid for, that's going to be way more successful for our profession than having someone in Iowa sitting in a cubicle saying, yep, we'll actually approve this claim for someone in Arizona. So I think when you and Alicia really start focusing on these standards, it's really getting into how do we differentiate ourselves, our business, and our service to where we're not stepping on any other provider's toes, and how do we work with those other providers as allies? Because I just look at our profession, we're just chasing Big Brother around. We're trying to get approval instead of when we're really the most valuable piece within the prevention healthcare space. So, I mean, I say that and I kind of went on a little rant. I mean, that's kind of, you know, my passion, but it goes into the value of what we're doing. We really don't need to compare ourselves to, well, how much does physical therapy charge? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, who cares what physical therapists charge? We're not insurance. Like, that's not our model at all.
And that is like going off that discussion. It's great because the last week we were meeting about the data and kind of just reviewing, like, we do these sign-in sheets. So the individual comes to the medical tent, they sign in, and based off their sign-in sheets, we take that at the end of each event. We input it into this Excel sheet, this data, and we kind of like, okay, this is the type of injuries. You know, we're looking at a bunch of different things, but we look at it and a lot of the preventative categories that we've defined in these sign-in sheets, it amazes me what we do on field that that's preventative is what I'm trying mm-hmm. to say, is what we do prior to events or what we're doing at these medical tents, besides being there for emergency medical, because obviously that is the number one thing, is we want to save life while we're out there. But we do so much more preventative work out there, and it's gotten some really, really interesting discussion, especially with Arizona U Soccer. Is they asked me, they're like, well, why do you need 5 medical tents out here when we only have 3, you know, catastrophic events happen? I'm like, yeah, but look at what we're doing well. You know, not that I want these events to happen, because they're going to happen, but in between these types of emergency events that are happening, this athletic trainer is doing A, B, and C just to get these athletes prepared and healthy and stay in the game. And it amazes me, like, how we oversee that athletic trainers, and we don't assume that that's an important part of what we do. And to me, we do way more preventative out in these on-site fields than we do anything else. Like, I personally think that we forget our biggest domain is preventative medicine and what we can do for these guys. And so a simple thing is, you know, developing an emergency action plan. So that's preventative. We should be putting that into that category because we're ready to go. We're preparing for these types of injuries. And so, yeah, just again, that was kind of like my going off a little tangent, but we do more preventative work on these on-site medical fields, like out as outreach, than we see emergency, which is a good. But I think a lot of people think that we're just there in case emergency happens, when that's not what we're there for. We're there for way more than that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I completely agree with you. And once again, it goes into what people are constantly promoting as the value. Like, yes, emergency medicine is valuable. But as you said, 90% of the time we're there, that doesn't happen. So Then people look at us as like, well, why are you here? I didn't have anything. Where if we are promoting the prevention model, where it's not a charge per encounter, it's not a charge per interaction, It's like, no, this is the value of me being here all day long. Here's the full list of services I'm going to provide. Then it's easier for people to put a dollar amount and pay for a lot of stuff instead of just a one-off every single time. I mean, I really have a hard time with our profession trying to validate how many ice bags and how much TheraX we are doing. And I mean, it's happening at the high school. Well, I did $300,000 worth of ice bags. No one is going to pay $300,000 for ice bags. Not a person, not an insurance company. Like, it's not real data. Like, I know it makes them feel good, and I get it because they're showing how much work they did. But there are a lot of restrictions around insurance payments, and what we do is not even close to the same category. So our profession has to figure out a new way to find value. And I think it's just based on the prevention model around accessibility to us. So I like what you guys are doing. I think you're going the right way. Yeah, there's things that if you refer someone to a next level provider, they could have been a copay. Like, yes, that's basically apples and apples. But all the stuff that we do every single day for 5 to 10 minutes, it wouldn't even be classified as a code. I mean, it doesn't even work. So keep it going. Keep it going.
Hey, Josie, if I'm working a club volleyball tournament, the convention center also requires that EMS is there. So they'll have the athletic trainer station, and then they have EMTs there. But pretty much we take care of everything unless we have to call an ambulance. Is there some sort of situation like that where you guys have EMTs on site as well? Is that part of your contract? How does that work?
So depending on the event, the organization, or like the venue actually will determine it a lot. So it's all dependent on the venue. There are some venues around here where it's city code where they have to have EMS or fire department on site. So yeah, we do that. We don't hire directly because it does that, but we do work closely with them. So there is a list of questions. Anytime a client comes to me and they want services, they're like, hey, we would like you out at our event. There's a questionnaire form that goes out to them, and it has everything from like, you know, what level are you? Are you a club? Are you youth? What ages, number of athletes? You know, is there an AED accessible? Is there any other medical professionals on site? And sometimes they will say, yes, venue requires EMS. So in that instance, you know, we make sure that we communicate along with that other profession and making sure like, okay, we're on site. You know, how can we help each other? What are we going to work together as a role? Now, most of the time we will be doing a lot of the work or we'll be doing there until we absolutely need them, but we'll make sure to communicate with them beforehand. One of the things that we started doing too is contacting the local fire departments around the main venues that we work here in the Arizona. So there's a local department that's over by this sports venue that they've gotten to know us really, really well because we're there every single weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And so we've went down there and we actually did training with them. So we did training with them, and it was simple thing of, okay, when you guys arrive online or on site, you know, who are you looking for? What are we expected to do when you get there? And just make sure that cross of communication is getting laid out and you're having that discussion, because a lot of times we have this, there's really just not that discussion made with them. So then when they get on site, they have to assume no one's qualified and they have to take over. So just having those simple discussions is the most important thing we've done so far for this.
What has been that discussion with coaches or event organizers for the events you're covering? So that's obviously the medical injury side. What about the coaches and the event organizers that are putting on the event?
Are you communicating with them? Sorry.
That's okay. Are you communicating with them before the event starts? So the coaches know that if one of their athletes go down, this is what they can expect?
Yep. So it's dependent on per client or customer that comes, but I'm just going to use Arizona Youth Soccer because they are our biggest customer. So we do everything from a coaching. So we send out an email at the beginning of the year saying this is the medical that they will be using, like Arizona Youth Soccer, HDirect partnered together. This is the medical you'll see on site. They're in big red medical tents. You'll see them wearing a gray shirt. This is athletic trainer on the back. So we give them the education and discussion. And depending on that organization, they can either filter it through their feed line or what we do is we have that discussion with that individual who's the point of contact on the phone. And then, you know, we even have meetings with the referees. So we have a referee meeting before really like any of our big, big events with whoever is going to be refereeing for that event and letting them know who we are, how we can work together when they call us on field versus when we need to go on field. So we had that discussion with them. And then for coaching, now it gets a little harder when you have those out of state coaches.
Yeah.
But what they usually do is we talk to the tournament director and we ask them to communicate along when the coaches check in at check-in tent, who we are, where we're at. They have a map of where we're at on the fields and just on the backside of it, it just kind of says what we do and what we offer.
Nice. Jeremy, any other questions?
Yep. So I'm going to be working a club volleyball tournament coming up here, and it is traditional, like, you know, you'll get the people that come by, well, are you earning your money, that kind of thing, those silly comments. But if I'm going to be maybe making a shift to focus on the preventative aspect, of course, it's just kind of an individual thing, like somebody calls me and say, hey, will you work this event? So it's not like a company doing that, but how can I begin the conversation of that we are preventative medicine? Because there's teams from, you know, Dallas and Louisiana, and, you know, so there's teams from 6 hours, 8 hours away playing in this tournament that I'm never going to see again. And how do I begin those conversations or those demonstrations of my preventative value?
So I think one of the things that I always have to make sure we do is when that individual comes to you and they say, hey, we want you to cover the event. Okay, well, what does that entail? What are you looking for? Making sure that you understand, you know, are they just expect, like, what is their level of understanding of what you can do? And then right there is the time of education. And Adam, you can add on a little bit more to this. But like when an individual or a customer will come and say, okay, we're looking to have on-site medical just in case anyone gets injured. Are you looking for more, like, have you had an EMT on-site fire department? Like, what have you had in the past? And then kind of see, like, what is their level of understanding of what they've had, and then educate them from there. And then I think a way of demonstrating is when we're out there, you've gained the coverage and you're going out there as an athletic trainer and you're going to be there. It's not just, you know, waiting for something. If a kid comes to you or if an athlete or an individual comes to you, the way you can demonstrate it is, you know, a lot of them were like, oh my God, you can tape us? Like, you can do that before? Or, you know, are you just here to, in case I get hurt? Like, you know, and educating them while you're out there and showing and demonstrating what you can do out there can help you out with that one.
Yeah, I will definitely piggyback off everything Josie said. Ask questions. Let them tell you exactly what they want, because then they're going to tell you what value you can bring. And then number two, athletic training sometimes is the hurry up and wait game. Right, we hurry up, we get the fields ready for practice, we sit there, we wait for the athletes to come in, we tape them, we do rehab when they come to us, and then we wait, and then we wait, and then we wait. If you're at an event, right, if you have a radio on you, and if there's the event coordinator that also has a radio, literally walk around the gym, walk around the fields, and just let people know you are there. And you don't even have to have a conversation about athletics, around injuries. That if they just see that you're available and you are a real person, they start to realize, oh, I understand that if something happens, yeah, they're here, but I can start to ask them questions. And we've all done it, right? How many times do coaches come up? My knee hurts. All right, well, we give them advice. Like, that's preventative healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. That's preventative, you know, services. It's not around, we're sending them to the emergency room. We're not billing them insurance. It's really just, I'm helping you in a way that no other profession has that accessibility, you know, twofold to us and to them. So really just, if there's a couple athletic trainers working, I would have that little group meeting with all the athletic trainers and say, let's all walk around and we'll walk up to the coaches and ask the coaches, is there anything I can do for you? You're on the sidelines, right? You're not at the medical tent. Is there anything any of your athletes need right now? Oh, you know what? Sally just hurt her elbow. Bobby just hurt his ankle. Cool. I'm right here. Let me help. And then they'll realize, oh, okay. I get it. They're around. They're available. It's not just when that catastrophic injury happens. They're here for, you know, full accessibility throughout the tournament.
And that's one of the things for AT Direct, we really, really emphasize and we really put it onto our athletic trainers. Like, when you get to the event, you need to make sure, and we always have a point of contact per venue so that individual knows. But when you get to the event, introduce yourself to the officials. Introduce yourself to the person at the check-in table. Let them know who you are, where you're going to be at, why you're around. And that is one of the most important things I tell my athletic trainers, because, you know, there's a couple events that be like, they didn't even know I was here. Like, they had no idea I was standing here. I'm like, well, did you go introduce yourself? Did you let them know that you were there? Because if you don't let them know that you're there, they can't blame them that they didn't know. So that's one thing we really emphasize on our athletic trainers. Have that conversation, introduce yourself, and don't just stand in the corner. Like, get out underneath the tent, get out of behind the table, and be active.
Okay, not making any excuses, but this specific volleyball tournament I'm talking about, there is literally like 80 courts of volleyball. So there's, I think, six or eight of us, something like that downstairs, and then there's some more upstairs. And so realistically, like, walking around, I'm just lost in the sea of mass people, right? And talking with the coach during the meet or whatever, there's no real warm-up. So, again, I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying to understand my specific situation, and then that way I can translate it to other people in that. So, either one of you, how do you see me at a large convention center with 80 volleyball courts? So, there's at least 160 teams plus the ones that are waiting to rotate in, really having that conversation and doing that. Most of them have been coming to the tournament and they kind of know that there's an athletic trainer there, or they have an idea, or it says it in the paperwork if the coach actually read it. So what do you see that looking like for me specifically?
So to go off that one, we actually cover a lot of events that are like that, very big events, and there's multiple athletic trainers, multiple locations. Now, we don't expect you to go walk around the 80 ones, because then we run into the, you know, playing devil's advocate, what you were saying is, then we run into like, then they can't find you. Then you're not at the medical tent. Then what happens? So what we do is we actually create like a radius. So I'm going to use soccer again, just because that's, again, what we cover a lot of. If we go to this one field called Reach 11 here in Arizona, there's 18 fields, full fields. When you break them down, most of the time they'll be up to 22 to 26 fields at a time. So what we do is we create the medical tents of where they're at, but we create a radius for that medical tent. So for example, that medical tent, we have four fields that kind of like sit, you know, side by side with each other. So that medical tent goes in the middle of the four, and then that athletic trainer has the radius around that medical tent. So we have the discussions on planning out where medical tent or medical is set up. And that right there can be hard, because you're trying, you know, you have to get the logistics of the venue and the layout, which again comes the conversation of with the client or customer that you're talking to for the coverage. And so we create this radius of these medical areas saying, okay, so athletic trainer A, this is your area. This is kind of where you're going to be focused at. Obviously, if a catastrophic event happens, you know, at the other field and you have to be pulled over, that's a different story. Versus athletic trainer B, this is your area. This is where you're going to focus on. So then that kind of helps create that. You don't have to go walk around these 80 courts. Then all of a sudden you're not at your medical tent and you're lost. And then people are mad at you because they can't, you know, you're not in a central location. So we create this radius around these medical tents or medical sites that our athletic trainers will be stationed at. And then as for the conversations, and what we do is most standing right there on the sideline waiting for the game to start. That's your opportunity to just quickly go up and be like, hey, you see that tent, or, you know, see this medical site over here? I'm the medical on site. I'm the athletic trainer. You know, if you need anything, this is where I'll be at. Look over this direction.
So once again, agree with everything Josie's saying. Some other ideas. Wear like the brightest shirt you can possibly find, and literally on the back of it, it says, I'm an athletic trainer. If you have any aches, sprains, bumps, or bruises, let me know. I can help. Like, I mean, it's all about marketing what we do. And then number two, when in college, I was a lifeguard. And just as Josie is talking and she's talking about the radius, when you're a lifeguard, you actually take shifts. So if there's a couple pools, you'll do like 15 minutes at one station, and then you go around, and then one of the rotations is an actual break where you're not working. So maybe it won't happen this year if the volleyball tournament is going to happen right away, but there could be this rotational system within event coverage. A, athletic trainers won't get bored because they're able to move around. They're not sitting at the same tent all day. But then number two, one of the rotations would be to just walk around all 80 courts, all 14 fields. Because like Josie said, as long as someone is there when an emergency happens, people know where to go find them. So what I'm saying can't happen if there's one person on site. I mean, obviously that's the disclaimer.
Hopefully there's not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if we're trying to really provide coverage, there can't be just, you know, one per 10,000 athletes. But I think that could be a nice thing to take away from this phone call, that if people are doing events and we're trying to educate external stakeholders, what if there is that roamer for 20 minutes at a time that is really just product awareness, and they have, like I said, a crazy shirt on that no one can miss. But even if it's a parent, right, and they're not a participant in the tournament, if we at least talk to them and let them know, oh, we know what's wrong with your knee. I can't treat you because my insurance isn't covering you because you're not an athlete. But that's why we're here to cover your, son or daughter. That's why we're here to cover your team, coach. Like, there's a purpose we're here. And it's not just in case someone has a C-spine injury. It's for all those minor injuries to get them prepared to participate in the sporting event. So I think that's kind of a bigger conversation. It's not going to happen if you have that volleyball event coming up in the next couple of weeks, Jeremy, if they haven't been prepared. But if you're at the event this year, start to strategize with everyone else that is there, the other athletic trainers, who's ever the organizer that represents the medical side of things, and start to think about how can we improve the communication of the service to everyone that attends future events.
All right. I think as far as the entire conversation, that's really, that tells us everything about Josie, what you do, and then Adam, great conversations. Josie, is there anything else that you would like to share either about AT Direct or your path or moving forward, what it's going to look like?
It's really, really exciting. AT Direct is in, I wish I could say it all right now, but it's still in the talks a lot, but there's a lot of great stuff coming out. In what we're doing with AT Direct and how AT Direct is moving forward. I'm excited to have been able to have the support of all the athletic trainers around me, to be able to have, even just Adam, like to have a simple phone call with him when needed. I cannot say thank you enough to the athletic trainers and just the individuals around who have supported my path in getting where I'm at. But I'd say I'm really, really excited for where AT Direct is headed. And the number one and the takeaway of this is making sure if you are going to be in this type of a setting or outreach setting, and it's very, at some point an athletic trainer is going to come in contact because they're going to want to make some side money on the weekends. It's just making sure you ask the right questions. And for example, Alicia Pennington has a lot out there on what to ask and how to protect yourself as an athletic trainer when you're out at these events. If you're going to do it on your own or you're going to come in under a company to do it, just ask the right questions, be very open and communicated with them, and make sure that you are being prepared for yourself and you have the right mindset coming in, because one, you don't want to put yourself at risk. Two, we're trying to promote our profession. We're trying to grow it the correct way. And athletic training is on the forefront of medicine right now. And there's a lot of opportunity that we can do in this type of setting. So that's my takeaways, is just as an athletic trainer, just make sure you ask the right questions, protect yourself, and make sure that you're networking with those out there who may have the expert advice that you don't have.
Adam, similar questions, final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's this mindset within athletic training that we have to do it all ourselves. I mean, Josie touched on it when she is providing the traditional service and now she owns a business. It really is about working with other professionals, work in your strength zone, partner with other people that have a different strength zone. And then overall, that team's going to be very successful. I mean, today is Monday. What happened last night, right? The Patriots won again. And that's because they have a team that everyone has a strength zone, right? The coach, the quarterback are the two main pillars, but then everyone else on that team, they are filling a role. And if anyone wants to go into business, it's about filling the role based on their strength, and not as much focusing on weaknesses, because then you become a jack of all trades, master of none. Focus on what you're really good at. If there's an athletic trainer that loves doing coverage and loves treating people, then stay in that zone. If someone likes to be entrepreneurial and they like to have their own business, then start a business. If someone wants to focus on, I want to create the best clinical education system out there, then focus on that. So I think our profession is just chasing what other people want them to do instead of focusing on what they really want to do or what they're passionate about. That's what we're finding out with Innovate AT. It's not about starting a business. It's about individual strengths and how do we foster that and encourage that for ultimate success.
All right. I want to remind you that March is National Athletic Training Month. And each year, the Sports Medicine Broadcast looks to add value during March. So you can go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/NATM. So each year, that'll be the same website. So I'll just update as I kind of have different prizes or things that are available. So check that out and sign up there. And then March 1st is when all those prize giveaways will begin. And each time we add a new sponsor, they'll also be added in there to again, add value to you as the athletic trainer. So check that out. Josie, someone wants to get a hold of you. How are they going to do that?
They can go ahead and get a hold of me through my email. And it's jharding@atdirectsportsmedicine.com. And if they have any questions or anything, they can, and it's on my website too. So it's at atdirectsportsmedicinellc.com for the website. So they could either just send me an email or clicked on the website and there's a question or contact box on there.
Good. Adam?
The easiest, just email me. adam@innovateat.com. That's simple.
And then the easiest way to get a hold of me, if you go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, there's an about page. I think I got a cool picture of my family there when we were on our summer vacation to Guam this past year. But again, that has everything, every way to get a hold of me there. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/AET direct is this specific episode. And real quick, without going into too much detail, some of the partners I got: Dragonfly Max, Frio Hydration, Nguyen and Myotech, and Hoist Hydration as well. That's a really cool, like Gatorade type replacement that I like. So check those out if you get a chance. Again, they'll be on the website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, and this one is AT Direct. So for Jeremy, Josie, Adam, that is a wrap. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
See ya.